Welcome, everyone, to Paradigm Shifters Radio. Paradigm Shifters are people that make a difference in the what consciousness collective of our planet these days. And today I have a wonderful a wonderful woman named Sue Newman, who has a, she came from a master's in photojournalism, quite a lot of life history, writing. She's taken at youth kids out on photojournalistic explorations where they get to write and take pictures in order to deal with how they perceive life. And you know, it really changes them and so on. And Sue has recently written a book called Saving Red, The True Story of a Rescued Horse-Turned-Rescuer. And I'm really excited to talk to you about this book today and about Sue and all the work she does. So welcome to the show, Sue.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's really exciting to read this book, Saving Red, and to know that this horse, who was kind of beaten down by a lot of very, very hard work, sort of spoke to you when you met him, sort of told you that he was attracted to you and you were attracted to him. Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah. When I saw him stuck in a corral by himself, the family had to leave. The place where they were renting was condemned, and there he was at a very end of a long road. And people came once a day and pitched hay, and that was that. And he had lost three of his horseshoes, but there was one remaining on him, and it had grown out to almost 6 inches. It was just terrible.
That's really hard to even imagine what that would look like, eh?
But it's like he just rose above it. But I just swear to God, I heard him say, "Get me out of here."
Aww. That's so interesting. And have you had that experience before with any kind of animals?
No, it's been much more conscious. This was just sort of a spiritual appeal.
So I find it absolutely remarkable that A, you did that, but B, what has happened since you met Red? What did you do? You took on, you have your own little, and you better tell people about your own little mini farm in Cascabel, but it was also in Tucson before. So tell people some of the settings of where you took Red when you finally discovered your amazing soul connection with him.
Well, I had been blessed with an inheritance I really hadn't expected, and I was able to purchase an old racing stable that was about to meet the bulldozer. And I brought the stable back, and in the process, I brought the horse back. And I guess you could say I also brought me back. But because I had my first horse there with me, I already had a place to stable a horse, so the financial business of stabling a horse was not an issue. And because I was developing a situation with boarders, they were paying for my hay expenses. So it was easy to pick up another horse. Of course, I thought he was going to be a guest horse, and that was not the case. But he became an absolute guru, a master teacher.
What was he like when you first got him home? Was he easy with you? Was he afraid of you? What was he like? And how old was he?
Well, he was in his 20s, but he was extremely well-schooled in terms of the use that he had been put to before as a working cow horse. He knew gates. He knew all sorts of gates. He knew how to position you exactly in the place where your hand could go. But all that came afterwards. When he first came to my stable, his abuse and my unawareness of my inner life just collided. And I walked into his stall, and he fled. And it took me a while to realize that I had to really do a clearing of myself and know how I was feeling. Because horses are so sensitive to what's going on around them. They need to be, or they're somebody else's breakfast. That it wasn't until I lost some of the fear and anxiety in me that he would allow me to interact with him, and we were able to grow together.
How long did it take to break into kind of a code of really knowing each other and being able to monitor your inner radiances?
Oh, it took weeks. It took weeks, and it just continued because you just never knew what hand gesture or something was going to set him off. It never ended.
It's funny because, I don't mean funny, ha-ha, but something that shook me right near the beginning of your discussion was a description of the auction where he was being presented. And it was, he whipped his head back only to have the chain yanked again. The man laughed at him. He knew how to use pain. Red could see it in his eyes and feel it in his body. He smelled of something sweet and the smoke that comes from white burning things he'd seen humans put in their mouth. And then he, a little bit farther down, he says, the man says to him, "Come on, you old bag of bones," the man growled at him. "Lift those feet, strut your stuff. We got to make some money off you." And on it goes to describe what you're talking about is a highly sensitive animal being marketed in such a way. It's really heartbreaking, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So no wonder he was scared of you and defensive, right?
Well, he was taken out of being in a pasture by himself for I don't know how many months. I don't know how long that went on before I heard about him coming back to my place. And for him, it was a release because there were other horses there, and horses don't do well alone. They need each other for companionship and for protection. So, you know, it was the auction that started everything, but fortunately, when I saw him, it was just a matter of getting a neighbor who was extremely helpful over all the years I was there, say, "I'll go get him." And I said, "Do you want me to come with you?" And he said, "Nope."
Mm-hmm.
I need this on my own.
And he knew how, didn't he?
Yes.
There's a lot in this book about know-how. There's a fellow who's at the horrible auction place at the beginning whose name is Shorty. And I was touched by the way he knew how to handle a horse that had been obviously abused. He knew how to handle him by looking down, not looking directly at the horse. Is that right? These are things I didn't know. If you look directly at a horse, he feels confronted, right? And so
right. If
you're trying to get him to do something, the fellow named Shorty looked down and he acted like he didn't really care if Red responded or not, and just kept looking at the ground. And I thought that was very, very important, is taking away any of the possibilities of overreacting that could scare the horse, right?
Well, think of a horse's eyes and think of your eyes.
Mm.
You, as in any predator, have forward-facing eyes. And when you're looking directly at a horse, that is an aggressive, hungry look. So when you're looking down, you're not a threat.
Hmm. And a kind of acting nonchalant, maybe, or acting still. Is that right?
Yes, and also removing any sense of fear of your own, because the horse picks up on that immediately.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty scary to think about, actually. So if you finally get him, he's got a different home for a while, and that didn't work out too well because the woman was pregnant, and you found him there, actually. You didn't find him at the auction, did you?
No. I took somebody else over to look at him, thinking that this was a horse he might be interested in. He wasn't the least bit interested and was ready to leave right away. But I just took in the whole situation, and I was aghast. And the universe just presented a situation where you could make a huge difference with this animal and get him to safety.
Well, you're so adorable because you've taken on a little farm ranch situation that really needed repair, really needed some TLC, really needed to be brought back to life. And you added to it Well, I know you also had a healthy horse, but you added to it Red, who needed to be brought back to life. And what did that do for you? Did both of those situations help guide your own healing? Like not just Red, but also the place that you were, reinvigorating?
I just felt like I was moving into a life purpose that always existed for me. I've always loved horses all my life. In fact, when I was 5 years old, I was sat upon a horse when I was out here in Tucson visiting family. And I can remember that time and other times feeling like I knew exactly what this felt like, as though it was coming through from another lifetime. But having the stable finally, after God knows how many birthdays of wishing for a horse, was just such an amazing experience. And I just kept right on moving forward and bringing the stable back, painting it all sorts of wonderful Mexican colors, having boarders who were supportive and eager to be there, and learning so much from this horse about myself. And it wasn't just always from the horse. I had a fabulous farrier. I spent days asking anybody I knew who had anything to do with horses, did they know a humane farrier? And it was when I was getting my saddle repaired that I asked somebody there, and they said, "Oh, well, you're looking at him. He's sitting here fixing the saddle." And
Oh.
this guy was absolutely incredible with him. You always knew that he was going to be late, but once he got there, he was yours. And he spent hours with me the first two trims on this horse and didn't
What
charge me.
exactly does a farrier do?
Well, I was not interested in shoeing. At first, we had to take this damn shoe off this horse and try to begin to pare down his hoof because it had grown so long underneath this one remaining shoe.
How
And,
excruciating that must have been for him. Or
well,
what
right.
was it?
And the farrier Chuck said to me, "You know, Sue, we're not going to do this in one pass. This is going to take months to let the hoof adapt to each trim." So there was no chance for me to ride him. But getting on him got to be a whole nother episode.
Wow. So how, one more moment. I mean, this is, sounds very ignorant because I am on this level. With this foot, with that overgrown shoe situation, did that really hurt him?
No, because I think the farrier was very careful to only go as deep as he felt as though he could.
Hmm.
And he didn't want him to be, he knew he was going to be sore, but he didn't want to get him too sore.
So he's really careful. So,
Very.
yeah. So how long did it take?
Oh, it was months.
Hmm. And then how did you, by then you've learned a lot about Red, right?
Well, it was the farrier who was terrific about explaining something that I did not know, because when he came there for the first trim, Red wouldn't come out of the stall with me. And he said to me, "Sue, go back inside with the horse, face the other way, and see yourself walking out the stall, and he will come with you."
You face
And
yourself the other way. So you walk in, turn yourself around as if you're looking out, right?
right, just to be in a different space so that he wasn't feeling like, "Oh, we're going to go do that again." But horses seem to pick up on your visual images.
Oh, really?
And sure enough, out the stall he came with me. He kind of burst through there. I don't know what the threat was for him, but for him, you just never knew what gestures were going to set him off. And then Chuck said something that was so important to me. He said, "So you need to understand that your anxiety is being picked up by the horse. But
Ah.
the horse is not examining this and deciding just where it's coming from and how to deal with it. the horse is simply responding and sending it back to you. You two are looping the same fear around and around, and you're the one who has to stop it.
So it's an anxiety atmosphere, then, you could say, huh?
Yep.
So that was good for you. So could you do that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, immediately, you know, when I work with people in the round pen and teaching them how to work with a horse in a round pen, I'll sometimes stand there and I'll start feeling anxious. And I'll realize this is not my anxiety. And I'll ask the student, are you feeling kind of anxious? And they'll say, yeah. I said, okay, well, let's work on that before we do anything with the horse, because the horse is picking it up.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, that's really wonderful information. So it just really reaffirms what we were talking about, which is the healing that the animal brings to you is so powerful. And so now let's talk about learning to ride him. Say his foot is getting better, and you had to go into like getting on to him and have him trust you that way. Was that quite the expedition?
Well, that wound up being the easy part. It was everything that led up to it, because it turned out that when horses were being used by the cowboys, it was like dumping off one truck and picking up another one, and frequently the saddle and the bridle were kind of ripped off of them, and often they were hit with the bridle swinging at them.
Mm-hmm.
So when I took his halter off, or when I took his bridle off, because I did a lot of preparation work with just saddling him and bridling him and taking it off and saddling him and riding him from the other side and taking it off. So I knew where his hot spots were in terms of reaction. When I took the bridle off, I wound up unbuckling everything, because it was such a different way of taking it off. He didn't panic.
Oh, how interesting.
Otherwise, what he did was just flee.
But he wasn't afraid of the noise and the feeling of the buckling and unbuckling, huh?
No, that he all knew. It was just expecting to be hit with it.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's very sad, isn't it?
Yeah, and the sad thing is that it's not unusual.
Yeah, they're really mistreated because we don't really realize how, I guess just being kind to animals and so on and paying attention to their wisdom is what we really need to advance to, right? So tell me about your first ride. Was it exciting? Did he love it? Did he feel a freedom?
Yeah, but I want to go back to what you just said, because the first page of the book is to all the horses living and dead who've given so much, have endured our ignorance, and occasionally had their trust rewarded.
That's very touching.
So, no, the first ride was easy. I went through all sorts of crazy precautions to get on him, but there seemed to be a clear demarcation between the groundwork with the horse and the cowboys who rode him, because the cowboys who rode him were kinder, and he was fine. In fact, he became very self-protective. There was a point there at one point where when I came back from riding him, I took him over to another spot because I needed to look at something, and because he was developing a cyst in one eye, he didn't see me dismounting.
Oh.
All of a sudden, there was a foot hanging in the air on his right side, and he dumped me and ran. Well, the next time I rode him and I started to get off, he was so careful with me. He kept stepping sideways, sideways, sideways to keep under me so I didn't fall off.
Wow.
And it got to a point where I was laughing, and I said, Red, you've got to let me get off. I'm okay.
Wow, what a smart horse, though, eh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he's trying to look after you.
Yes, it was such compassion.
He, I can tell he really loves you. Of course, I knew him, and I know he really loves you. Do horses actually love?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you become part of this herd.
It's wonderful, huh? So let's go a little farther. This is a really quite an amazing journey. As you went along, let me see here. I'm thinking about several directions that you've taken, but you did have, maybe it's too soon, but you had Ben come in, and Ben also was super aligned with Red Soul, was he not?
Oh, very much so. And if you recall, he did a reading with you, and what came out of it was learning that he had once been a conquistador, and he just felt sick over what was going on and how brutal things were, and he left, and he became a farrier, and came up through Mexico into Arizona, and he discovered through your reading that Red had been his horse. And that he was trying to make sure that he was okay.
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? I don't just mean the reading. I mean that reality, that kind of reality is more than, it's an epic poem, isn't it?
Yeah, and I had said to him again and again and again, this feels like your horse. And that became a confirmation for him.
So what is the role you played with the horse then? If he's, of course, many lifetimes, it could be many different things, right?
I don't really know. I think it was just a matter of both of us beginning to let some of our anxieties go, live in a little bit more peace.
And how long was Ben involved?
That went on over a period of about 2 years. He turned up because his uncle thought maybe he'd like to have some interaction with horses because he had just come down to Arizona from a Montana dude ranch. And he was struggling with depression. It was really awful. And I just invited him back after his first visit. And I said, I think there's a horse here that you might enjoy working with. And just it went on from there, but he hated the heat. So that once we got into that May heat, he just had to leave.
But I find it really intriguing that you and Ben and Red were somehow involved in a very interesting, I guess what we call soul healing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you had your own history with him as well.
With him, the horse of the man.
With Red, it's a little bit different than what Ben had as well, right?
Well, and I remember turning to Ben at one point after some incident had happened and saying, well, I think you've met your master teacher. They come in different forms.
They do, don't they? Wow. Well, it's very, very powerful. So I also feel like it healed, Red's presence healed whatever was historically between you and Ben.
Well, it brought us together. And I did so much work with him in counseling of one way or another. And he did so much work on the stable in terms of construction and digging and electrical work and plumbing and whatnot, and it was an incredible exchange.
It was a real meant to be, wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. And I've stayed in touch with him. When he left the second time, the second year, because he went up to the dude ranch again the following summer. He later married, and it's been a good relationship for him, and We're in touch. We're in touch. And he left me a wonderful note the first year he left where he said, I am always with you.
Aw. Well, isn't it true? If you've got terrific past lives and connecting through the animals of those, not just the animals, but red, for example. That's always with you. Makes a lot more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah,
It's
no,
not very
it would.
superficial. So here was red, and talk more about him. Also, I'm looking at page 127, 128, where we did a reading on you and your, and oh, here it is. We did a reading on Red and his history, right?
Right.
So not only was he mistreated in this life before you received ownership of him or domestic ownership with him, but
why don't you let me read just that portion?
Why don't you do that? I think it's really interesting.
So this is you standing, looking in his stall.
Mm-hmm.
I see him out on the range, probably before he was caught. He has a wonderful life running free, but then these men catch him in a roundup of range-bred horses. There's a fire. Oh yes, they're branding him. He does have a brand, doesn't he? I nod yes. And they tie one of his back legs way up around to his neck. I don't know why they do that. I just see him trussed up like that. And there's noise, animals screaming and dust and pain. They castrate him right there. I start to sob. Something flipped the switch. Oh, I have a hard time with this.
I do too, but keep reading, darling, if you can.
She knows now why. Oops. Why this horse is here. This is about healing. It isn't about riding and saddles and the right bits and flying lead changes and obeying commands. This is about sanctuary.
Uh-oh. And then down,
and then,
keep going.
Go on. Ronnie lovingly looks at her. This is about you, too. I nod and wipe my eyes. Ursula finds something for me to blow my nose on and hands it to me. Ursula is another one of the wonderful characters in the book. And you go on and say, we know that your father took you down, wanted to take away the best in you. It wasn't physical, but it might as well have been, Ronnie continues, without missing a beat. I think it's perfect that the two of you have come together. You need to pay close attention to what comes up when you are with him. Do you feel something when you are with him?
Mm. Do you want to read the next line and then we can... Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sniffling through my tears. As soon as I go in there with him, I feel this amazing fear. I hadn't even thought about it, but I don't feel it with the other horses. It's just here with him. It's like I don't know whose it is. I'm just realizing now that it takes me a minute to even know I'm feeling it. Some of it is so familiar. And you say, good place to start, dearie. We'll go for more later. Let's leave it here for now. You've got plenty to work with.
It's the depths and realms of your relationship and that horse's activity. It really brought a lot of compassion forward for me. Just seeing him and watching him. And he got better and stronger, didn't he? Didn't you do a miracle job with him and yourself?
Right, and I remember one of the comments that the same farrier I was talking about, he said to me, why did you pick up this horse? And I said, I don't know, I think he picked me. And he said, well, just looking at him in this shape, this was before the first trim, he said, we both know where he was going after this. The killer buyers would have picked him up for slaughter.
That's really sad, huh? Now, that's very sad. So now you get to a place where you're having a lucid dream, right? And And I think it's really relevant because you were following a lot of intuitive knowing when you brought Red into your life, when you bought your little ranch, your little midi farm, and also then when you brought Red into your life. And so I love, after all of this kind of illumination, then you have your lucid dream. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, do you want me to read it?
Sure, yeah, that'd be great.
Well, it starts out with hearing the rooster crowing and realizing that I'd forgotten to lock up the chickens, and they were all at 5 o'clock in the morning underneath the trailer making a hell of a lot of noise. And I do everything I can to go back to sleep, and it drops me into that lucid dream space.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I was feeling sad. At the same time, I seemed to be intently functioning for some reason in public. I was directing a large truck into a yard, showing the driver where to back up. The vet had just arrived. There was a feeling of foreboding. I was arranging for a horse to be put down. It was Red. I was sad, but not distraught. The dream was loose enough for me to engage with it. Confused over its meaning, I asked, "Where is this?" And I was shown that it was in my own stable yard. And I woke with a start, feeling my face wet with tears. I let them come to release the force of sadness and began to piece together the dream. Red was being put down. God, he'd just gotten here, I thought. What is this about? It was on here on the property. And then I felt a wave of recognition. Of course, he was to remain here with me for the rest of his years. A sense of peace passed through me as I wiped my eyes with a sheet, realizing that his future was no longer in jeopardy. The journey that started with years of hard ranch work into middle age, being sold at auction, going to and leaving the woman before, and then coming here. It was over. The impending fear of abuse that surfaced with his anxiety had begun to come to an end. He was home. She wondered if he knew.
I wonder if he did. Well, in the next paragraph, if you want to just continue for just a couple more sentences, I'd appreciate that.
Over the weeks, people from all over the neighborhood had come to his stall. The palpable agony of his bolting away from the doorway slowly began to change. He became curious about the gifts people shared with him. Apples he didn't have much use for, but the carrots hit the spot. I silently thanked them all, the carrots and the people. I couldn't have done this without them. He needed to know that everyone coming to his stall would be safe. And to my relief, he had slowly started to come around.
Oh, that's so wonderful, isn't it?
Mm.
But actually, it seems to me, and you can speak about this, it seems to me that he was kind of leading an interesting procession of healing, was he not? He seems to be having an impact everywhere he goes on anybody that he meets as well. Did the people in your neighborhood really love him?
No, I think a lot of people were confused as to why I got an old horse like that. But there was one woman, I mean, people would come to be with him. It was just kind of uncanny. And there was one woman who had no interest in riding him. She just wanted to lead him around and be with him because she had heard somebody talk about him.
Hmm.
He was standing in the stable yard talking to me and a bunch of other people with her feet crossed. And she looked down and realized that Red's feet were crossed the same way.
Hmm.
And she looked up at me as if to say something, and she changed her stance, and so did he.
Oh, my. So how would you explain that? That's a really interesting thing.
I don't know. it was eerie. It was very eerie.
But don't they perceive on, I mean, they work with the subtle energies and the frequencies of all of us, do they not?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a lot of that will direct how we look and how they look and so on. I mean, look at dogs. Dogs take on their master's appearance, don't they? I always think that's hilarious.
The other way around.
Anyway, I want to back up to where Lacey, the woman who had had him before and then was pregnant and couldn't keep working with Red, and she was heartbroken. And she was very pregnant by then. But the quote is, "Oh, Red, I've learned so much with you. I've learned about myself, that I'm not just a wife and mother. I'm me, and I was able to give you some peace." I think that's another indicator, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Those things are really something. Makes us all think about animals. Would you say that this is called equine therapy, or does it fall into that category at all? Because it is that.
It's a horse's sensitivity that's being partnered with a human, I don't want to say used, to have the horse reflect what's going on for the human. Linda Kohanoff, with her equine facilitated psychotherapy, tells the story about this one horse that she wouldn't let anybody work with because he was a stallion and he was aggressive and he was very hard to guess what he was going to do. And this woman who came to work with her was really in trouble. And she insisted on working with that horse. And Linda kept saying, "No, I don't trust him." And the woman insisted on it. Well, it turns out that this horse was the exact mirror of the person that she, or people that she chose to be with.
Wow.
And when she was grooming him, he was fine. As soon as she started to leave her body, he freaked. As soon as she came back in and was present and groomed him again, he was fine. And that's sort of a great example of how this therapy with horses works.
That's very similar to having like a dog that is alerted if you're about to have a seizure. You know what I'm saying? That kind of preparation is vibrational. Sorry, keep going.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, and you know, the horses get triggered by things so much earlier than a therapist can pick up. So that there's no escaping the reality of what's going on. The horse has just, as soon as the horse responds to something, it's clear what's happening. And I think one of the advantages of this kind of work is that it gives you a chance to sort of watch the movie and see where it is you start getting into trouble.
You mean with the animal?
Or
the animal gets into trouble?
Well, yeah, because the animal becomes the mirror.
That's actually really amazing, isn't it? Think about it. Now, Linda Kohanov wrote her books like 15 years ago or something. I don't remember exactly when. But
yeah,
is...
The Tao.
Pardon?
The Tao of Equus.
Yes. But since that, the inception of that kind of thinking and understanding, do you think we're better with animals, better with horses than we ever were? Is it getting better?
Oh, I think so. And it's not just with Linda's work. I think Monty Roberts and John Lyons and some of the other horse trainers have, coming off of their own experiences, their own backgrounds, have begun to approach these animals so differently and with so much compassion, and they get to accomplish what they want with a horse so much faster without the angst and the anger and the forcing.
Yeah, because when we read that auction block, the very short blurb about the auction and how cruel people have been, is it much better than that now? Is it much? Tell me it is. I want to know that.
Oh, no, I think it is. You know, in one way or another. I mean, some of the awful stuff still goes on, but it's certainly better, and so much of it has to do with people just learning that there are other ways of approaching training horse.
Mm-hmm. I've heard stories about a horse that goes in to see people in a senior citizen's home, and someone else, a horse that goes into a hospital and goes all to the right rooms according to who needs him. That's a wonderful service, isn't it? I wonder if the horse is like that.
Well, I have no idea.
But it's sort of interesting to think, because it seems like Red had, I mean, yes, they're mirroring back and forth, but he seems to have a preference that you be better and you be safer and you be all right. Do you see what I mean? It's like a choice, eh?
Oh, yeah. No, I became very conscious as soon as I started to ride him.
Mm-hmm.
But probably in part because of all the work that I'd done with him beforehand, because it was days and days and days and weeks of all the preparation stuff. So not just the saddling and the bridling him, but moving him and working with him in the round pen and having him choose to come to me, which Monty Roberts talks about as join up.
Mm.
Because what you're doing in the round pen when you're making a horse go around and around is what the dominant mare in a herd is doing when she wants to get, usually, the bad boy out of the herd long enough and keep him out because he's being bad. And that is the most unsafe place for the horse, because that's where the predators can pick them off.
Ah, so they get ostracized.
And eventually she relents by doing what you were saying Shorty was doing. He was looking down to the ground, and he was not making eye contact, and he was basically allowing Red to come to him. And that's what the dominant mare does in the wild, allowing the bad boy to come back in.
So is that where we're taught, watching the wild ones in the, out in the wilds? Is that where we're taught what the horses need, or did Monty Roberts have a special communication with horses, or?
Oh, he did the most incredible amount of research, just sitting and watching herds and watching interaction.
That's a real meditation, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's another page 161. I always love this little part where you were teaching him to put the halter on, or you were teaching yourself to put his halter on. Do you want to read that little bit?
Oh, okay.
Or you don't have to, but it's just that...
I've got it right here.
Okay, good.
As I opened the halter, I had to step towards his head and break contact with him because I had, before that, I had been stroking him. He accepted this. And as I held the halter open in front of him, he moved his head towards it, snorted, and then pulled back. I stood there with the halter, not moving, and saying aloud, "Let it be his choice. Let it be his choice." He thrust his massive head into the halter again, and I slowly drew it up over his nose. He didn't try to bolt. And although I could sense his rising tension, and I put all my energy into being aware of what I was doing, while at the same time paying attention to not only what he was doing, but what he might do, and most importantly, what I was feeling. If I could stay quiet, I thought, he'd let her strap the thing on him. He lowered his head as if in supplication, and I flipped the strap behind his ears and ran it through the buckle. My God, Red, we did it. We did it together. Thank you, big boy.
Well, that was brilliant, actually. Let it be his choice. I had the feeling when I was reading that it is that statement you made really penetrated his awareness and consciousness, didn't it?
And mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I needed to step out of the role of, doggone it, this horse is going to just take the halter and I'm putting it on him.
He's going to do it my way and what I say.
Right.
But that's a big lesson for a lot of us, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
When
Oh, yeah.
When we're leading and tutoring people. So what are you doing now with horses? And I want you to maybe talk a little bit more about Ben and his role, but I'd love to hear you futurizing and tell us what you're doing now with animals and with horses.
Well, I've been working with a young gal, teenager, who has some issues. And over the last 2 years, we've done so much work together, and it's all in the round pen and then some riding. And at one point, it was amazing because she comes from a very strict household where things had to be absolutely correct. And she would tear up all the time over one thing or another, and it took me a while to figure out what the triggers were. But at one point, I said to her, I want you to repeat this back to me, and I want you to yell it at me so that you own it. There is no failure here. And I made her say it again and again and again until I could really feel she took it in. And it's that kind of a sweet moment that working with horses and people on that level provides.
And she's gaining in strength and self-assurance and all that, right?
Oh, yeah. She wants to be an aeronautical engineer.
Yay!
She's got the wherewithal to do it. She's been homeschooled and is brilliant.
And having high-frequency energy awareness instead of blunting your sensitivities, which people used to do, but increasing them and their rapport with life is going to be a great teacher for her. And it always is for you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How wonderful.
Well, working with you has always been such a magical experience. You always move something forward.
Oh, thank you. Well, we want to do that. I'm committed like you are. So let's go back into talking about Red and what happened as he got older. How much longer did he live? He was already a little bit old, wasn't he?
Well, I think he was in his 30s. It was a little hard to figure out his age. And you can ask about, you know, six different vets and they'll all give you a different age. It's harder than you think to age a horse. If what you're interested in is talking about what happened towards the end, well, what I'll mention is your reading comment about that I was leaving.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that. And it was tossed off, was it not? It was just tossed at you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you were really, you'd spent so long building up this beautiful little ranchero, right?
Right. Can I just read that?
Yes, please.
All right. So as a preface to that, I'll... let's see. It seemed as though the stable had a finite existence. The city of Tucson was causing so much pressure on what they were calling infill, building in every possible existing blank, empty space. And my stable was becoming more and more isolated, and it was harder and harder to find a place to ride. And it started to become clear to me that I might need to think of something else, somewhere else. But it was a reading that Ronnie gave very unexpectedly, just blurting out to me, you're leaving, you know, that caused me to become more aware that that was perhaps happening. But it became very hard for me to think about all the time and the effort that had gone into bringing the stable back.
Mm-hmm.
And once I had connected with someone who was wanting to purchase the property with a handshake over the gate, I realized that the whole place was going to be torn down. And it was very strange. But then more things began to come my way, and it became so important. And the whole time I was in Tucson, of realizing how important it was to constantly stay aware of what's being presented to you. And so I'll read from this chapter here.
Please do. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, has Red already departed at this point, or is he still alive? Okay.
No, he's with me.
I just wanted people to know.
Yep. I was sitting over my morning coffee. There was more change in the air. Someone had sent me a large newspaper article wadded up in the only envelope available at the time that was about a group of really committed people living in the San Pedro Valley on the other side of the mountains that she looked at every morning. They were trying to bring back grazing lands from serious and perpetual overgrazing. To manage this, they were running cattle on it, but doing so with a careful eye on what the land could sustain. It had been a long piece in the Tucson Sunday section. I had skimmed it, put it down, and then was drawn to it again with growing interest. There was a strong sense in it of community and purpose, of leaving things better than you found them. Ronnie's unexpected comment about my leaving had not gained much traction until I read this again about what these people were doing. Once again, there was the familiar energy draw, a moment when timing and will and information drew things together. I heard a very loud yes.
Wow.
A wise person once told me that the way you leave something is the way you enter what's next. You don't want to be taking negative energy into the next endeavor. So what was it that had gone on here, and what was I leaving, and how was I leaving it? I realized in retrospect how my time with Ben had mirrored my time with Red. Each had given and received in their own generous way. For me, once again, it was offering sanctuary. The horse knew somehow that he was finally safe, that he was home wherever I was, just never leaving my space, no more frightening auctions, no one trying to rope him or leaving him in an isolated enclosure. And Red had brought magic to both of them, connecting them. Ben had the whole rest of his life ahead of him. Who knew where that might lead and what lessons would emerge? We all have multiple starting points that lead us somewhere else. If we're lucky, they are places of safety.
Wow, wonderful. Wonderful. Also, what I really love is pretty much all the way through this story, it's your being pulled on a cellular level to the next step. Is it not?
Oh, yeah. And I don't think I lived that way when I was living on the East Coast. It doesn't seem to be part of the mindset.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're in the rat race, you don't do that. You can't.
Oh, right. You know, bringing up kids as a single parent, the whole thing. There's no time for reflection.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to gulp and go.
Well, there's a whole lot of more story to get from Sue Newman, I'll tell you that, because of the next venture that you took. And I'd love it if you came on and talked about that at some other point, even if you don't have your other book yet. No, this is a wonderful, wonderful story, Saving Red, and I'm privileged to have been, in a part of it. You've put me in the book, which is very flattering. Thank you very much. I hope you'll turn this into a movie, not for me, but for Red. And the book is called Saving Red. It's the true story of a rescued horse turned rescuer. And maybe we're all like that when we're twirling and spiraling up into our what our becoming, the becoming that I love to advertise that we are in the state of. But anyway, this is Sue Newman. And Sue, do you have a website for this?
Well, there's a Facebook page under the title of the book, but the book can be purchased on Amazon.
Good. And
yeah. And
so you're on Facebook. You've got the Saving Red, the whole thing, just Saving Red, right?
Saving. But actually, the whole is it, but I think if you just type that in, you'd get it.
Well, I sure recommend it. This is a really marvelous, marvelous book, and I thank you for all your work. I've watched you pioneer and wring magic out of some difficult, all kinds of difficult things. That seems to be more what your specialty is in life. And I can hardly wait for the next installment. So thank you for coming in as a paradigm shifter, and we'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Oh, thank you so much, Ronnie.
You're very special to me. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you for listening to Paradigm Shifter. And this, the recording of this podcast is up on BBS Radio. Just look into Paradigm Shifters and Sue Newman.